Welcome to Dubs OT, your weekly Warriors podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring interviews with players, coaches, and media members. Dubs OT is brought to you by TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, home of the 2020 PGA Championship. Toscalito Tire and Automotive, your one-stop on-the-spot auto service headquarters in San Francisco and the North Bay. Terzo, an authentic upscale European restaurant in the Cal Hollow neighborhood in San Francisco. And Rose's Cafe, a favorite local hangout also in Cal Hollow. Now here are your hosts, Ray Woodson and Joe Castellano.
Coming up, we'll talk about the Warriors' 122-103 win over the Cavaliers in Game 2 of the NBA Finals. The Warriors are up 2-0. But first, I want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your 2-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Well, Ray, the Warriors have a 2-0 lead after they played really well in Game 2, and they win it 122-103. And Steph Curry sets a new NBA record for threes in a game with 9. And they got off to such a great start in this game. I thought that was a big key. They had a lot of easy shots, layups, dunks. And, you know, even though they were shooting really well in that first quarter, you still couldn't count Cleveland out. It was like the Warriors couldn't shake them. They still were only down by, 4 at the end of the first quarter, even though the Warriors are shooting like 60%. I thought Cleveland was going to come back. I really did. But the Warriors just never let it happen. It seemed like they always had an answer for any kind of a run that the Cavs had.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if the Warriors were going to shake them like they eventually did. But, you know, Joe, I had kind of a funny feeling about this game all along. I didn't feel terribly uncomfortable for the Warriors, even when the Cavaliers did rally in the third quarter, which is the Warriors' trademark quarter. The Cavaliers stayed with them, kind of expected that, but I didn't expect the Warriors to fold in this game because they were getting pretty much everything they wanted offensively. They were moving the ball well, and their top three shooters were on. And, of course, that was one of the big questions pregame, was whether Klay Thompson was even going to be able to play. But the word got out pretty close to game time that he was available, and Steve Kerr had said pregame that his ankle improved quite a bit from the day before when Klay sounded pretty downcast. That was a big, big thing to happen because they still don't have Andre Iguodala. The other thing is they started JaVale McGee at center, so the opening act was JaVale McGee and the All-Stars, and that worked out pretty well early on. And I think the emphasis was to get off to a better start, have more energy at the beginning. The place was humming because Carlos Santana did a great rendition of the national anthem. And then J.R. Smith gets introduced, and he gets a big cheer from the crowd.
MVP.
Later on, MVP chants. I'm just cold. So cold.
I don't like that.
They're laughing and they're cheering him, but I guess they forgot he almost took out Klay. Neither team was too happy with J.R. Smith after game one. But I think two of the keys were they got to a better start. Kevin Durant had an outstanding all-around game. We'll talk about Steph's NBA Finals record, 9 three-pointers in a game. But Kevin Durant at both ends of the floor was just great. He had 26 points. He had 9 rebounds, 10 of 14 from the floor, 7 assists. So for the folks who say, they shouldn't run the offense through KD, it stagnates. That didn't happen today. He had some nice dish passes, and he defended the rim very well, including in the second half when LeBron missed a few close-in shots. Durant and Draymond were great in that regard. So all around, a really fine game for the Warriors. Like I said, I didn't feel too uncomfortable the whole way because the Warriors' defense ebbed and flowed a little bit, especially in the third quarter when they had some defensive breakdowns. But their offense was pretty consistent all night long, and the ball really moved well.
Let's hear what Warriors head coach Steve Kerr had to say after the game.
We played really well tonight. There were a few things that bothered us in the second half. A few defensive breakdowns we'll take a look at on film, but overall it was a really good balanced game, good defense, good intense defense, and excellent offense. So yeah, we're happy with the way we played, but we know this is it's just getting started.
We'll be right back with more Dubs OT in just a moment.
In the late 90s, San Francisco celebrated the opening of Rose's Cafe at 2298 Union Street. Now, 20 years later, Rose's continues to provide a warm, friendly atmosphere, and you can still count on great food, Italian fare created using organic local produce, fresh seafood, humanely raised meats, and free-range poultry. Rose's bakes all of their own pastries and breads. Open 7 days a week, they serve breakfast, lunch, dinner, and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Check out their menu and hours online at rosescafesf.com. The next time you're driving to or from AT&T Park, stop by Rose's Cafe in Cow Hollow at 2298 Union Street in San Francisco.
We mentioned a couple of things I wanted to touch on. First of all, JaVale McGee. I mean, that definitely was brilliant, I guess, by Steve Kerr to start him because, yeah, he was getting all these easy baskets. And he was doing a good job of catching passes, dunking. He had that little jump hook. I mean, he really brought it all out there offensively that you just really hadn't seen as much, I don't think, from him. I mean, at times you see that. And then the Kevin Durant factor, to me, the biggest difference was that he was not forcing shots. He wasn't getting into isolation. I mean, that he can score a lot of times anytime he wants, but he wasn't forcing it. He was playing within the flow of the offense. You know, every once in a while, he just pull up and drill one. But he had a great game. He really did. It was much better. I think anybody, forget about stats for a minute, just to look at the flow of the offense and the way he played within it, I thought he was just much better.
I think they have a much better idea of how to attack Cleveland now and how Cleveland is going to attack them. And it's okay to have an ISO for KD once in a while, especially when the clock is running down and he has a mismatch against somebody like George Hill. Well, he has a mismatch against almost everybody in the NBA. But when it gets down to that and you don't have something available for Clay or you don't have something available for Steph, then that's a pretty good fallback plan. And sometimes, of course, he can lift up and shoot in transition and be very effective in that way. But, yeah, I think the flow was much better tonight. And I think now what you're going to see in Game 3 is how is Cleveland going to respond? I mean, desperate team. You know they're going to bring their full force in Game 3 and try to play their game. You know the role players play better in Cleveland than they do on the road. You might see actually an effective game, for example, from J.R. Smith. Not a whole lot of help coming for LeBron. And the thing they did tonight was they at least made him a little more uncomfortable. They got a body on him. They switched on him. They didn't let him get into the flow that he had in Game 1 when he was unbelievable. But I think they're going to get more physical with the Warriors in Game 3. And the two questions I've got going into Game 3 are, how will Clay's ankle respond after a long flight? And fortunately, a couple of days off here. And will Andre Iguodala play in Game 3?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, they'd love to have Andre back out there, but at the same time, I mean, Sean Livingston's done a nice job. Now, I'm not going to say that he's replaced Andre. There have been a bunch of different players, I guess, that have sort of played the Andre role. I mean, Jordan Bell defensively sort of taken over that role, but Livingston has stepped up offensively. Those pull-up jumpers that, they're very dependable to begin with, but it seems like in this series now, I mean, what is he, 9 for 9 from the field in the first two games? He's just really helped them out offensively, kind of picked up the slack that Andre would have on the offensive end, and maybe you could say that Bell has done a pretty good job defensively where, you know, Andre would be out there. Bell has tried his best, at least, against LeBron, and I think he's brought a lot of energy, too.
Livingston's been great off the bench. And, you know, we talk a lot about the threes and layups. That's the new NBA. That's the emphasis. And a lot of teams eschew the mid-range jump shot. The Warriors do not do that. They know there's a place for that shot in the flow of an offense when other stuff isn't available. And that stuff is available for Livingston. And he's one of the veteran players who most definitely benefits from the playoff schedule where you get a few extra days off. You get breaks between games. And he looks very springy. And it's reflected in, you know, how effective he is on that jump shot. And it reminded me a little bit tonight of, I think it was Game 1 in 16 where he was so brilliant. And he had 20 points coming off the bench. He's been a Cavalier killer. And he's a very important guy in this series. I think he'll continue to be so, whether Iguodala plays or not. David West had some effective minutes tonight. Hit a corner three.
I know. Wow.
Joe, I'm telling you, I watched him pregame. He was practicing corner threes. And he was abusing the rim. He was missing a whole bunch of them, but he made the last one. So that was the memory he took going into the game.
Speaking of threes, getting back to Steph and the nine threes, the best one, the one that was the most fun, was the one him falling away with the shot clock running down. Love was all over him. He kind of misdribbled it a little bit, and he's falling away, and whatever that was, like 30 feet away. He just heaved it up there. But he practices that kind of stuff all the time. You know, he's constantly being creative with the shots that he takes. He swishes it. That was a big shot at that moment. I mean, it was just incredibly exciting to see that go in.
That shot was a backbreaker. I think that was the beginning of breaking their spirit. They're like, okay, he's going to make that shot 99. You know, and he's the one guy that's, it's not a ridiculous notion to think he can make that kind of shot. We've seen him make circus shots like that. And he said he was going backwards to get some space, get some room to even get the shot off. I was thinking, well, maybe it'll hit the rim and they can get an offensive rebound, and it hits nothing but net. So that's going to be, if the Warriors going to win this series, that's going to be a signature shot in this series.
I actually felt a little bad for Kevin Love because at times it looked like he played really well defensively, but guys are making shots over him. Klay Thompson made one over him that he had to, you know, shoot kind of a high arching shot of three that was in the first half that I remember. And not only did Steph hit that buzzer beater at the end of the shot clock, he also hit one in the corner that was a 4-point play. I don't even know if that was a foul on Love, but the official called it because he was right near Steph's feet. And yeah, I mean, give him the foul. And I just felt bad for Love because it felt like he was trying. He was putting pretty good defensive efforts together, but it wasn't working out for him.
Yeah. Well, you're the Cavaliers. That's not the switch you want. You don't want to be leaving Love out on an island against Curry. A couple of years ago, yes, when Curry was 75% physically, or maybe less, and you know, a lot has been made of that shot that Steph had over Love that clanged in the last minute of Game 7 in the 16 Finals, or right about the last minute. And listen. I know this much. Every time Curry gets ISO'd against Love, you know he is relishing it because he wants to make him pay for that moment 2 years ago. Don't think players forget about that. They don't. There's a little bit of that going on. It's like, you know, it's like, all right, dude, we know what was going on 2 years ago. I'm going to continue to show you that this is a bad idea. I'm going to continue to show the Cavaliers it's a bad idea. But sometimes you get caught in switches, and that's what happens. I mean, Curry got caught on switches on LeBron.
Right,
and that's not a fair fight. You know, he does the best he can, but LeBron can just bowl his way to the basket against somebody like Steph. But that's the little game inside the game, I think, with Curry and Love.
Let's hear what Klay Thompson had to say after the Warriors' win over the Cavs.
Being on the training table for felt like three straight days, something I'm not used to, but this point in the season, any means necessary, and the ankle feels great. I won't do much tomorrow, and I'll do a little bit Tuesday, but to conserve all I got for Wednesday, because I don't want to play with it. You know, it's something that you use a lot. I don't realize how much you use your ankle till you hurt it. But I'm gonna.
You should have asked me.
Yeah. that's that.
That's Klay Thompson. Steph Curry was also at the podium after the game. Let's hear what he had to say after his 33-point game at Oracle.
I mean, we watched the film, and obviously from game one, LeBron had an amazing night. But a lot of it was just a lack of kind of sense of urgency early in possessions to try to just be physical. Klay, Draymond, KD especially were huge, you know, in that transformation to game two with just putting up a little bit of resistance and just trying to make them work. And we still had some slip-ups and things we can correct going into game three, but energy and effort and physicality and all that from the jump was pretty, you know, dialed in, and it gave us a lot of momentum and confidence to, you know, have a better start to the game and then sustain that over 48 minutes for sure.
That's Steph Curry. We'll come back with more Dubs OT right after this.
Are you looking for a great place for dinner? Then you really need to try Terzo, an authentic, upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. When you sit down at your table at Terzo, you will feel the warm and welcoming ambiance. They make you feel like you're at home with great service and a delicious meal. Serving dinner only, Terzo offers unique food drawn from the Mediterranean region. They change their menu daily based on the local availability of product. Open 7 days a week, Terzo offers Osagest reservations, but they do have a bar area available for walk-ins. Check out their website at TurzoSF.com for daily menus and hours. Drop by Turzo at 3011 Steiner at Union Street in San Francisco for an exceptional neighborhood dining experience and your private dining needs.
How about the Curry-Kendrick Perkins confrontation? Now, I watched it a few times. ABC didn't really focus on that. I don't know if they just didn't have replays of it, really. But I went back and just watched it live a few times because I had it on DVR. And the thing about Perkins is that he was leaning back in his chair. What is he, 6'10"? Legs are long, and his legs are long, almost to the baseline over there. Not the baseline, the sideline. So he's leaning back. He doesn't move out of the way. Everybody else moves out of the way as Steph's coming over there to shoot that. And he kind of tripped him a little bit. You know, he didn't do it intentionally, but Steph didn't have much room to get around him. So Steph turned around and, had some words like, hey, get out of the way. And that's how that all started. And, I don't know, much ado about nothing, as Steph said in the post-game press conference. But it just seems kind of unprofessional to not get out of the way in that situation. What do you think?
Well, knowing Kendrick Perkins, and he likes to be an instigator, some people are going to say, he was trying to trip him. I don't think that was the case, but he wasn't trying real hard to get out of the way either. And if you're an assistant coach on the sideline, if you make contact with a player, whether it's intentional or not, and the player gets hurt, the NBA better release the hounds on that, because there has to be a suspension for something like that. You have to make sure that you're out of the way and you're not interfering with a player on the court, especially somebody who's had a history of ankle injuries like Steph Curry. So. I don't know if any discipline's going to be coming down on that. Steph said post-game it was much ado about nothing. I think it was a little bit more than that. Certainly was in the moment.
But
maybe that was fuel he used to kind of embarrass the Cavaliers after that, because he sure did.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it looked like Perkins was on a recliner or something. The way he was just sitting there relaxed, like he wasn't even going to move. That's the thing that cracked me up. It's just like he just didn't seem like he was in any hurry to move out of the way. What are you doing? You're just sitting there like you're at home on your recliner watching the game on television.
Yeah, the only thing he was missing was a beer. So that would have completed the look. But, again, just stay the hell out of the way. I mean, that's pretty basic, especially when you're in the first row. So if I'm Curry, I'm pretty sensitive about that kind of stuff, because, people are getting in your space and your jump shot already anyway. You don't need somebody who's not even in the game getting involved in the action. So I think in the end it's just going to be a little sidelight. But, Curry comes off as a nice guy, but when it comes to basketball, when it comes to those moments, I forget who said it on Twitter, but they said he's the meanest nice guy out there. He's gonna make you pay for any imagined slight. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Let's talk about LeBron James, because he had the 51 points in game one, and he really is expected to carry this team. And I thought he still played a really good game. I mean, statistically, it was more about assists for him, and I thought he felt like he could do that because, he's got defenders coming at him left and right. He had 13 assists. He had 29 points. I guess you could say only 29 points. But I didn't think he played a bad game. I just think that they count on him to where they need him to shoot more. I mean, the drives to the basket are always devastating, and they probably need more of that.
Well, yeah, he's going to have to drop 50,
Yeah.
I mean, they feel like they should have won game one, and they probably should have, but they didn't. That might have been their last best chance. We know they're going to throw everything but the kitchen sink in game three. But the thing for LeBron tonight is, as I said at the outset, Steve Kerr mentioned a postgame as well. They made an effort at making him a little more uncomfortable tonight. They felt like he got too comfortable in his flow early on in game one, and it never stopped until they got to overtime. And, just putting a body on him. And, you're going to accumulate some bruises doing so, but maybe by the fourth quarter he's not able to finish as well. And make the other guys beat you. That's what we were talking about on the last podcast. What's the approach against LeBron? Do you try to stop him best you can and let the other guys beat you? Because Kyrie's gone. So where's the support? Kevin Love? George Hill? J.R. Smith on the road? Are you serious? It's just not there. And the percentage of shooting threes off LeBron passes is around 30-31%. So that's not going to cut it. So I think when you pick your poison, okay, that's the poison you pick. Now, it may be a different result when they get home, like I say, with the role players playing with a little bit more confidence. But I think that's probably the best way to go about it, try to wear him down because he's going 48. Well, he went 44 tonight because it was a blowout at the end. But you know what I mean. They're going to lean on him in a close game. He's going to go the full 48. So try to make him as tired as you can and see if that leaves tired legs and shots hitting the rim in the fourth quarter.
Dubs OT continues after this from Toscalito Tire and Automotive.
You have to admit, collecting NBA titles is a new trend for the Warriors, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at six Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide warranty backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Warriors games, going to Toscalito equals a stress-free life. With four Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo, Toscalito, more than just a tire store.
On the ABC telecast, Jeff Van Gundy was unhappy that Tyronn Lue got that technical. I mean, I don't know what he said to the official, but he gets the technical, and he felt like it was a double standard, Jeff Van Gundy did, that Draymond Green was yelling at the official when he thought that he had a tie-up, really, on LeBron, and then, you know, a foul was called, or maybe it could have been traveling, could have been called there, but he was getting into it with the officials, and Jeff Van Gundy's point is that Draymond Green gets on the officials all the time, so they kind of let a little bit of that go. They're just sort of used to it, I guess, and with Tyronn Lue, he doesn't say much, and then all of a sudden he gets a T because he says something. I don't know if that's something that really I would point to and say there's a double standard, but I do understand what the point he's making about Tyronn Lue. I don't know that he deserved having a technical there unless he, you know, he swore at the official. We never know those things for sure.
Well, first of all, if Draymond Green had shoved the ball into the face of Tristan Thompson at the end of game one, he would not be playing tonight.
Right.
You know, so there's a double standard that way as well. But I suppose, and I've noticed it too, there are times where Draymond's barked at the referee and they either walk away or they don't tee him up. But I also think, you know, it's the finals and players are going to get intense. They're going to get heated. The referees know that. Ty Lue was on the court, you know, and he said so postgame. He was on the court, so he got teed up for that. You know, I think it was after LeBron stumbled to the basket and maybe he was fouled. I haven't seen the replays. I know a lot of people felt like he was fouled on that and didn't get the call. And LeBron was, you know, begging, pleading with anybody in sight. You know,
right.
You know that,
yeah,
that look on his face where the arms are outstretched.
Yeah.
Kind of the same look he gave J.R. Smith at the end of regulation game one. But there was a bit of a makeup call, you could say, later when he slammed Jordan Bell to the floor, and Jordan Bell got called for the foul. But I think there, that was the rookie taking the bait. So, you know, I don't think there's a double standard with Draymond. I think a lot of teams are trying to bait him into technicals, and they're getting frustrated because they haven't been able to. I do think Draymond barks at the referees, and maybe after a while you do get used to it a little bit. But I think it is a different standard between a coach and a player on the floor who's in the midst of the battle.
I'm glad you brought up that play with Jordan Bell because that was interesting too. Bell fouls LeBron James. And you know, I don't even know that that was a foul on Bell. I mean, he was just baited into it, just the way you just said it, because he was standing there. He wasn't even using his hands. And basically LeBron shoved him away and then the foul goes against Bell. Well, Bell was really upset, but he went over towards the bench and Andre Iguodala is telling him, well, why are you even over there fouling him or getting
exactly
close? Anyway, yeah, you're, you know, whatever it is, you're almost full court from where they need to score and you're fouling him. So he sort of learned something, but he continued to be aggressive, and then he came up with that steal, and you know, of course, that led to the missed three there by Curry and then the subsequent discussion with Kendrick Perkins. But that was an interesting sequence for Jordan Bell, learning yet still staying aggressive.
Yeah, I get being aggressive and trying to put a body in some full court pressure, especially late in the quarter. You've got a few seconds left. You want him, you know, make his path to the basket. Yeah, I mean, you want to try to stop the ball if you can. Hard to do that with LeBron. But when you're 80 feet away from the basket, you can't do that. And that's going to be part of the learning experience. Like you said, Andre Iguodala, being the coach, itinerant coach that he is, was counseling him on that. It's a learning experience. In that situation, you know that LeBron is not going to get called for a foul. You know, if it's going to go anyway, it's going to go against the rookie. Double standard? Maybe so, but that's just the way the league works, and you got to know that as a rookie. So chalk that up to a learning experience.
This Cavaliers team came back from down 2-0 against the Celtics. Yeah, I just don't count them out with LeBron. You know, the Warriors held serve in my mind, but of course, Game 3 is huge. I mean, Klay Thompson mentioned it in the postgame that they've got to go in there focused because they know that. They know that the Cavaliers have done this before. They've pulled it off. You know, it's not a bad team. Maybe they're not as good as the Rockets, but it's not a bad team. And if they were to get momentum, then you never know. And it's always in the back of the Warriors' minds about what happened a couple of years ago when they blew the 3-1 lead. So I would imagine the Warriors go in there really focused for Game 3.
I think they will, and Steve Kerr said at postgame, they've been here before. They've been in this situation before. They know what they have to do. So I don't think it's going to faze them. They've been to the queue so many times now. I don't think it's going to faze them at this point. They know exactly what's in store for them in Game 3. Like I said, the Cavaliers can bring their full force in this game, and you just, like, withstand the early energy and stay in it. And maybe you can come up with your patented third quarter, maybe not. But maybe you can pull it out late, and you do that, and the air is totally out of the balloon. That's what you know. You know that if you sustain the early rush by the Cavaliers and you're in the game, then they're getting a little nervous, like, you know, if we can't close this out, we're down 3-0, and that's pretty much it. And, yeah, the Cavaliers did come back in the Eastern Conference Finals, but the Warriors aren't the Celtics. The Warriors are a little banged up with Klay's ankle and with Andre out, and he may play in Game 3. We'll see. With a few more days, but you know, the Celtics, I mean, that was a clang fest in Game 7. They couldn't hit anything. I don't see that happening with the Warriors. I mean, when it does, they'll lose a game, and I've already predicted Warriors in 5 for this series, so it wouldn't be a surprise to me if they drop one in Cleveland, but I think they're coming back here to close it out in Game 5.
By the way, to finish it out here, the atmosphere at Oracle, you were there. I wasn't there. I can only imagine how electric it was.
Yeah, Carlos Santana with the national anthem. I think it was his daughter on the drums, which was a nice touch. Some people didn't like it. Some people did. I thought it was great. I think, you know, great live performance, and it got the blood flowing. And everybody was fired up after that. And then cheering J.R. Smith and the introductions and all that stuff. It was a tremendous atmosphere. You know, people say, oh, well, it's not going to be like that when you go to Chase Center. Yeah, who knows if it's going to be the same crowd? Maybe not. But, you know, if you think that this crowd, this group of fans, is tired of seeing Warriors Cavaliers and this is blasé now, well, sure wasn't for Game 2 tonight. And if it comes back for a potential clincher in Game 5 or a 2-2 series, I think it's going to be turned up even more.
By the way, did you see the video that somebody made with J.R. Smith where he's running out towards the perimeter and then he just keeps running and he goes into some mini mart and drinks a beer? I guess he must have done a commercial that it cuts to, but it really cracked me up. I thought it was really funny.
It was beer or Henny. I'm not sure. Might have been Hennessy.
Yeah, might have been Hennessy.
Joel Embiid made a joke about that after game one. So that was pretty creative stuff. Yeah, there's pretty funny stuff on Twitter, on the internet, with some of these photos. And, of course, LeBron imploring J.R. Smith, hey, we were tied. That right there launched 1,000 memes. So, you know, people can say, well, he didn't throw him under the bus post-game, but, you know, the bus had already rolled through after that expression he had on the court. There was nothing you could say after that. And it's going to go down as one of the biggest blunders in NBA history if the Warriors go on to win this series.
You're right about that. Ray, glad you were there, and hope you enjoyed it a lot. And we'll talk to you after Game 3 in Cleveland.
Sounds good. Let's take it to the queue. I'm glad I'm not there this time because I want to keep my eardrums.
Thanks for listening to the Dubs OT Warriors podcast. Join Joe Castellano and Ray Woodson again next week on thesportsvirus.com.